Genesis chapter 30. So, I've been doing IT work for a long time. In fact, I think my calculations are about 45 years. When I first went to college, I was hired immediately as a consultant for the school to work in their computer lab to help students when they would come in with errors in their different applications they were writing. I would go through the code with them and help to figure out syntax errors and other things and stuff like that. And so I started, my first job in college was actually doing IT type work, and then I was out of it for a while. And then when I was hired by Chicago Title, I was hired specifically to do something similar to what I'm doing right now. And so I've been doing this for so long, I feel pretty confident in my knowledge, my skills, and my abilities. I think if we were to ask Dustin about his architectural stuff, he probably has a certain level of confidence in what he does, and I'm sure Nate as an engineer, and Matt, I'm not sure if he feels comfortable with what he's doing, if he feels... But you know how it is. You've all worked in a field or something, right? Where you, and you probably, you know, even my wife Amy homeschooled the kids for, you know, for a good chunk of their lives, developed a certain amount of confidence in her abilities to do that, right? And so that kind of comes with the territory. Now, when it comes specifically to those of us that are employed, I would say that along with that, when I look at what I've done over the years in say, let's just look at Chicago Title, one of the things that's become really clear is that the people that I've worked for and the company that I work for have benefited, have been blessed because of my skills, but also my work ethic, and I would even argue my Christian faith. They've definitely been blessed because of that. And I can go over the, you know, and I don't say this to puff myself up, but rather to say God has used me in a way, in the environment that I've been in, even the secular environment, to bless those that I work with. And that might be sometimes financially. It might be other ways as well. And that's been pretty clear. I think if I spent some time really thinking through, I'd come up with some, and I have some examples, you know, in my mind. I think God does that. And we're going to see a passage today where it's pretty clear that God uses believers to bless those that they serve. Now, I think just think about it from a reasonable standpoint. If you've got somebody who is ethical and they're moral and they have a strong work ethic, and you as an employer hire them, what should you expect? That they're going to be a good employee. They're going to do a good job. That their work will be blessed by the Lord. If you hire somebody who is unethical, doesn't have a good work ethic, you're probably not going to be blessed. You're probably not going to reap rewards from that. And we've seen plenty of that. I don't want to slam a whole generation, but we've had difficulty in my environment to hire young people who have the same work ethic that many of the older do. In fact, they oftentimes come in with high demands for high salary with very low expectations of when they have to be in the office and what they're going to do. And we oftentimes hire and then have to fire. There's something going on there, and we can debate and discuss what the cause is of that. But the principle that I'm trying to lay out here is that God often uses us as believers to bless not only other believers, but also unbelievers in the way that we serve and the way that we minister. And it might be through our jobs. It might be through volunteer organizations. It might be the way we serve in our community or our neighbors or other things. That's pretty clear. We're going to see that reflected today. But with that, I've got a caveat. Sometimes when we do that, when we serve others, we get taken advantage of. Sometimes we get cheated. Sometimes we don't get what we deserve or what should come our way. In other words, as God uses us to bless them, sometimes it comes as a cost to us. Sometimes we don't get treated properly. That's just the consequence sometimes of that. That's life in the real world. So that happens. We're going to see that today. But with that in mind, God sees everything. He sees that, and He always takes care of us. So we're going to kind of see how that goes today. And again, as I think about my own time, especially the same company I've been working with now for 30 years, I've had instances where I've really struggled with that. I've had instances where I've recognized, wow, you know what? Because of what I've done, the company has actually grown, or the company has made more money. There's some products that I've produced for the company that have been tremendous in terms of helping the sales team, the sales staff. But there's been times, too, where I feel I've been taken advantage of. Either not gotten raises when I should have, or even one instance in the past where I got money taken away and it wasn't my fault. And I felt like I had been penalized for something that I didn't deserve to be penalized for. And I struggled with that tremendously and had to decide, do I stick around? What do I do? Will God take care of me? And God absolutely, certainly took care of me in that circumstance. And so we're going to look at this today as we look at Genesis chapter 30 and we look at Jacob's relationship with Laban. I'm going to break it down into primarily two sections today. We're going to see how God blessed Laban on account of Jacob, but how Jacob was also mistreated and cheated by Laban. So we're going to see how the Lord blessed Laban on account of Jacob, but it cost Jacob something. And then the second thing we'll see is that in spite of all that, God ultimately blessed Jacob in spite of Laban's unfair treatment. So let's go ahead and look at verses 25 through 36. We'll read those to get started. We'll see how God blessed Laban on account of Jacob. Chapter 30, verse 25. Now it came about when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, send me away that I may go to my own place and to my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me depart, for you yourself know my service which I have rendered to you. But Laban said to him, if now it pleases you, stay with me. I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account. He continued, name me your wages and I will give it to you. But he said to him, you yourself know how I have served you and how your cattle have fared with me. For you had little before I came, and it has increased to a multitude, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also? So he said, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. If you do this one thing for me, I will again pasture and keep your flock. Let me pass through your entire flock today, removing from every speckled and every spotted and every black one among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and such shall be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me later. When you come concerning my wages, every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, will be considered stolen. Laban said, good, let it be according to your word. So he removed on that day the striped and the spotted male goats and the speckled and the spotted female goats, every one with white in it, and all the black ones among the sheep, and he gave them into the care of his sons. And he put a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. So ultimately what we have here is Jacob has worked for 14 years. He had been serving Laban for that time, taking care of his flocks. And it was now time for him to depart and go back home, to take his wives, his family, all his possessions if he had any. And we find out here he really didn't have any. Take him and head back home. So it's time for that. However, Yahweh had blessed Laban tremendously. We see that both in what Laban says in verses 27 and 28. Jump back there with me. Laban said, if now it pleases you, stay with me. Why? I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account. So Laban knew that the Lord had blessed him. Now we can spend some time on this word divine. I don't really need to. That was a technique used to determine whether God was speaking to you or not. It may be here a negative thing, or it could be that prior to the law, they would use this. You know, even the Jews would cast lots to determine God's will sometimes. So I'm not going to make a judgment on this, but he somehow divined or knew that the Lord had blessed him. It might have simply been something that he sees. Wow, look at the flocks that I have right now. But clearly Laban saw that God had blessed him. And you notice what it says, I've divined that the Lord has blessed me what? On your account. He specifically recognized that God had blessed him because of Jacob. Not because of himself, but because of Jacob. Jacob also recognized that God had done it. Look down at verses 29 and beginning of 30. But he said to him, "You yourself know how I have served you and how your cattle have fared with me. For you had little before I came, and it has increased to a multitude. And the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned." So both Laban and Jacob recognized that the Lord blessed Laban because of Jacob, on account of Jacob. That's a pretty amazing thing. It goes back to what I was sharing earlier as we started today, that I believe that God blesses others on our account when we serve them. So whether it's our jobs or our neighbors, whatever it is, when we are serving others, God blesses them on account of us, because of us. And so that's what we see here. But you see, there's a problem, because Laban's estate had grown tremendously, but Jacob had nothing. We see elsewhere from another passage that all he came to Padan Aram with was his staff. No possessions of any kind. We've talked about this before. He had to work to pay off the dowry. So he came with absolutely nothing, and at this point, he has nothing. 14 years after working, he's got nothing. Verse 30, second half of it. "But now, when shall I provide for my own household as well?" He's got a wife, two wives. He's got some concubines. He's got a bunch of children. But he's living with Laban. And he says here, "When am I going to be able to provide for my household?" What he's talking about there is building his own estate, having something for his children once he's gone. I think about that myself. You know, my hope is that someday when Amy and I pass on, there's something left for the kids. I think every parent would like that, unless you're Warren Buffett, who says, "My kids get nothing." But that's the reality of it, right? But he says, "When am I going to be able to do that?" So in other words, if I stay here and work for you another 14 years, when am I going to be able to provide for my own family? That's a righteous goal, to be able to provide for the family. And that's what he wants. He had 12 children, 11 boys, one girl, but he had no wealth or possession of his own. So that's the proposition. So Jacob kind of gets, Laban gets the message. What do I have to pay you? What do I have to do then to keep you here? So Jacob makes this proposal. It's interesting that this statement by Laban here, "What shall I give you?" is very similar to what he said earlier to Jacob to get him to stay back in verse, 28. He says, "Name me your wages and I will give it to you." Well, his wages were, "Well, I'll work for your daughters." But now, he's going to work to build his own possessions, his own wealth, his own estate. What's interesting about this is some commentators claim that it was pretty common back in the ancient Near East for somebody like Jacob, who was working for Laban, for his wages to actually be about 20% of the flock, which means that he would, for every 100 sheep that he would care for, he would get 20 of those from the owner. That was considered a fair wage. And so Jacob could have asked for that, but he didn't. In fact, look at what he says in there. He says, well, really, when Laban says in verse 31, "What shall I give you?" Jacob says, "You shall not give me anything." So he doesn't ask for the standard wage. Instead, he does something rather interesting. "Do this one thing for me. I'll pasture your flock, but I need one thing from you." He says, "Let me pass through your entire flock today, removing from there every speckled and every spotted sheep, and every black one among the lambs, and the spotted and the speckled among the goats. Such shall be my wages." So when you kind of look at this here, there's a couple of things going on. It's going to get a little bit confusing here, and I might even get lost in the text myself because of the speckled and the spotted and the black, and it gets a little bit crazy. In essence, what Jacob offered to do here was to take the irregular lambs and goats. Those weren't considered highly prized. So he really is just saying, "Give me the irregular ones." Now, when it comes to genetics and all that kind of stuff, most people believe that that would have amounted to maybe 5% of Laban's flock. And so he basically says, "Let me go through And I'll remove every speckled and spotted sheep, and every black one among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and those will be my wages. So in the ancient Near East, and I don't know if this is true today or not, but sheep were generally all white. Goats were generally all black. And due to genetic mutation, sometimes you'd get these speckled or these mixed. There's no way to know exactly how many of those were in Laban's flock, but there were some. But again, most estimates are maybe between 5 and 10% just based on genetics. Now, what this also included, if you go down to verse 33, is that in the future, when Laban and Jacob would sort of measure up, if you will, when they would come together and settle accounts, Jacob basically says, I'll get to keep all the speckled and spotted. If for some reason you see pure white or the pure black in my flocks, then you'll know I stole them from you. So in essence, what he's basically said is, let's start with, give me from your flocks the irregular ones. And then any irregular ones born going forward will also be mine, but you'll keep all the regular ones. So the plan is, I'll take a small portion today of the irregular only, and then any irregular ones born in the future I'll keep, but you get all the regular ones. That's the plan. That's how he'll be paid. And Laban agrees to it. He's good with that. That sounds good. Why not give up, you know? He's not going to give up the best of his flock, right? Sure, you can take those irregular ones. Those aren't really much good anyway. Nobody wants those, apparently. So Laban in verse 34 says, good, let it be according to your word. So at first read, it appears in verse 35 that after Laban says that, that Jacob then goes through Laban's flocks and takes out those that would be his. That's what I understood when I first read verse 35. He removed on that day the striped and the spotted speckled goats, but here's the problem. Who's the he in verse 35? Is that Jacob or is it Laban? It's Laban. So what did Laban do? Verse 35. So Laban, he removed on that day the striped and spotted male goats and all the speckled and spotted female goats, every one with white in it, and all the black ones among the sheep, and he gave them what? Into the care of his sons. And then he, Laban, put a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob. And Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. So what did Laban just do? Instead of giving to Jacob what Jacob was supposed to get, he apparently, secretly goes through and pulls out all of them himself, gives them to his son, and then drives those 3 days away. Jacob has nothing. What a snake. What a deceiver. But you notice it says, but Laban went ahead and still took care of his flocks. But he started with nothing. So Jacob gets cheated here again, but yet he still decides to stick around. So, when we look at this, before we move on, what do we do with that? Just a couple of takeaways for me as I think about this. The first one is that when we serve others, God often blesses them on account of us. I think we've already stressed that enough here, but we certainly know this is true when it comes to serving other believers. Galatians chapter 5, verse 13 says that we were called to freedom, brethren, only do not let your freedom turn your freedom into an opportunity for the rest or for the flesh, but through love, serve one another. Why do we serve others? So that we might be a blessing to them. So the Bible calls us to serve our brothers and sisters in Christ, and God will bless them on a result of that service. That's pretty clear. But what about when it comes to non-believers? Does God bless non-believers on account of us? What we see here in this passage, clearly, we don't know where Laban was spiritually, but he surely doesn't come across as a good guy. We're going to see even worse in a minute here. We believe that he probably knew who Yahweh was, but did he really worship Yahweh? We don't get any impression that Laban was this great godly man. But in spite of that, the text clearly tells us that God had prospered Laban on account of Joseph. Because of God's favor for Joseph, he blessed the work of Joseph's hands, and because of that, Laban's flocks multiplied tremendously. And so, clearly God does bless even the unsaved on account of us when we serve them. I think we could probably argue fairly well that this is found throughout the Scriptures. I think about Genesis chapter 39. The Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. You remember the story. Thus the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned in the house and in the field. The Lord blessed the Pharaoh of Egypt because of Daniel's work. Daniel served the pagan king Nebuchadnezzar. I'm sorry, that was Joseph, but when Daniel served Nebuchadnezzar, this is startling because Nebuchadnezzar was blessed in a way that one might not expect. You remember what happened to Nebuchadnezzar? Daniel chapter 4, I'll have you turn here on your own, but Daniel chapter 24, verse 34, Nebuchadnezzar, as best we can tell, gets saved, declares God as king over all. It's an amazing passage that because of Daniel's work before King Nebuchadnezzar, it ultimately leads to King Nebuchadnezzar's salvation. Did the Lord bless him on account of Daniel? Absolutely. And so we see this in the Scriptures where God will bless even unbelievers on account of believers in the way that we serve them. I believe that that's tied to what we find in Romans, which is that the kindness of God leads to repentance. And when God does that, and it certainly did in the case of Nebuchadnezzar, led him to repentance by being blessed because of Daniel being there in his kingdom. I'm sure if we thought about it, we'd be able to come up with examples in our own life where God has extended his blessings to other people because of us. And it's not because we deserve it, it's because God is good and God is gracious. But he blesses the work of our hands, and that ultimately leads to blessings for even the unsaved. God's common grace. So that's the first takeaway. The second takeaway is that when we do serve, especially the unsaved, sometimes it involves sacrifice and costs us something like it did Jacob. I mean, he sacrificed 14 years of his life. Now, he got wives and children out of it, but he literally had nothing of monetary value to even support them and to take care of them. And then, when he finally works out an agreement to finally start building that estate, he gets ripped off again and starts with nothing. So it cost Jacob something. I think about the apostles. What did they get out of their ministry? Think about the way the world was blessed. The fact that you and I are here today is a direct result of the apostles in their ministry. And what did they do? They gave up their lives. It cost them something dearly so that we might be blessed. And it's often the case. Ministry, ministering to those who are both saved and unsaved, often costs us something. God will use us to bless them, but sometimes it comes with a cost to us. Sometimes it's not fair to us. Dustin and I were joking about this. Was it yesterday when I think it was you. You know, no good deed goes unpunished. You've all heard the idiom, right? No good deed goes unpunished. You know? Let's move on. In spite of all of this, God still blessed Jacob. In spite of the unfair treatment that he had received. In other words, ultimately God sees it all, and ultimately God will still take care of us, he will still bless us, even though there will be times where maybe we're taken advantage of, or maybe we get the short end of the stick. Look at verses 37 through 31. We're going to read verse 37 and following in just a minute. But even though Laban had deceived Jacob and removed all the multicolored sheep and the goats from his flock, what's interesting is that they continued to produce multicolored lambs under Jacob's care, which means even though Laban had taken out all those spotted and speckled, and all Jacob was left with pure white and pure black from the goats and sheep, Laban's flock continued to make speckled animals. So Laban's plan didn't really work out. Look at verses 37 through 43. Then Jacob took fresh rods of poplar and almond and plane trees and peeled white stripes in them, exposing the white which was in the rods. He set the rods which he had peeled in front of the flocks in the gutters, that's the water troughs, even in the water troughs where the flocks came to drink, and they mated when they came to drink. So the flocks mated by the rods, and the flocks brought forth striped, speckled, and spotted. Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the striped and the black and the flock of Laban. And he put his own herds apart, and he did not put them with Laban's flock. Moreover, whenever the stronger of the flock were mating, Jacob would place the rods in the sight of the flock of the in the gutters so that they might mate by the rods. But when the flock was feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler were Laban's and the stronger were Jacob's. So the man became exceedingly prosperous in the large and had large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. So this is a rather challenging and actually a controversial passage, because it seems to suggest that Jacob engaged in some type of, what are we going to call it, superstitious hocus pocus, some weird kind of animal magic with these stripping off the bark. And, you know, that when I was first taught this story as a young Christian, I was taught it as, well, by putting these striped rods standing up, when the sheep would look at those and they would mate, they would produce striped offspring because they were looking at striped rods. That's the way it was taught to me. Well, I was a young Christian, and so I thought to myself, must be the way it is. You know? So, did he engage in some type of weird hocus pocus, making the animals stare at these so they would produce offspring that looked like the rods? Well, if we look at exactly what it says, we might get a little bit better feel on this. It says that Jacob gathered rods, which are branches, and he gathered it from three different types of trees. They're listed as poplar, almond, and then a tree called a plane tree. And he strips off the bark, so it makes white stripes in these. Then he placed the rods, when you look at the passage as a whole, he's placing them actually into the water trough. Okay, where, and this is where the flocks would come and drink. What comes next is a little bit unclear. Some translations suggest that the ewes, the females, would simply come to the water trough and then they would mate there. That's the New American Standard kind of alludes to that. Other translations like the NET suggest that Jacob put the rods into the water when the ewes were in heat so that they would mate. So in other words, he would wait until they went into heat, then he would put the rods out. Still others, including something like the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Old Testament, suggest that the ewes would go see the rods, and as a result of the rods, whether they're because they're in the water or maybe there's some chemicals there, who knows, that they would then go into heat. So he would put the rods in there to make the sheep go into heat. So it's not really clear exactly what he's doing here. Is he making the sheep go into heat? Is he waiting to see them go into heat? Or is there something that's in the tree bark and all that's in the water that's causing this? It's not really clear exactly what he's doing here. What it does tell us, though, is that he also would only put those rods out when the stronger ewes came to drink. But that's not even clear what that means either. Some believe that it means that when they were the ones that were more prone to be able to give birth. Some others have said that it might have something to do with the fact that sheep often would bear their young twice a year. And that, I don't know if it was in the springtime, they were much stronger, they produced more, but then they would sort of double breed them. They weren't quite ready to be bred, but they'd breed them again to get more, and because of that, they would give birth in the fall, and they'd be more feeble. So it's not really clear again what he's doing here, but we are told that when the stronger ones would come to the water trough to mate, he would put these rods in the water. But when the more feeble ones would come, he wouldn't do that, which seems to imply that he wants the stronger ones to mate, but not the younger or not the more feeble ones to mate. And somehow, these rods would help encourage mating and help encourage more offspring than not putting them in. So, are you confused at this point? Because I am. We don't really know exactly what he's doing, but we do know that in some respects it's affecting how they mate, when they mate, and whether or not they produce strong or feeble offspring. But again, we don't really know how all this works. All we know is that he apparently is doing it, and he's either an absolute idiot and is just following some superstition, or we have to trust that he knew how to raise sheep and goats, and there was something to what he was doing that made sense. Now, what's interesting about that, I came across an article, of all places, Answer in Genesis, did a great technical article on what may have been happening, why he chose these specific trees. According to the article, there are some medical benefits to the specific trees that Joseph selected. And it may have been that by peeling that bark and causing the sap to start to come out and placing that into the water, that it served some medical purpose in some respects. And what's interesting about that is these particular chemicals that are found in these particular trees were known to help enhance health, induce heat, and increase fertility in animals. Now, those who disagree with that say, yeah, but there wouldn't have been enough. We don't know. It doesn't tell us how many rods he did. But there is some suggestion that there could have been a medical reason, that it could have increased fertility, that it could have made stronger animals. That does sort of seem to fit the context to some degree. Now, can I prove that's what it is? No. People, some agree with it, some disagree with it. But again, I like Answers in Genesis. I trust them. As I read through the article, there was a lot of scientific information in it that I thought, this all sounds fairly reasonable, so I have no reason to disregard it. So I'm going to go with that, that Joseph wasn't an idiot. He wasn't just following some superstition. He knew something about fertility and ewes and how to breed, and he put that into practice here. So that's partly what's going on. Now, if the story stopped there, we'd be left to think that Jacob's success, because it does tell us here that as a result of that, he was having these speckled and spotted goats and sheep being born among Laban's flock. Remember, what he started with was just one color sheep, one color goat. But what he's getting are the offspring are being born striped and speckled and spotted, which all belong to Joseph. So he pulls those out, it says. And he separated them. Why did he separate them? Well, if he would have mixed them, then Laban would come back and say, well, wait a minute, you're breeding mine with your spotted ones and you're deceiving me. He didn't do that. He just pulled all those speckled and spotted out, and all he kept working with Laban, was the normal colored ones. And yet they continued to produce these striped and spotted animals. Okay, so that's what he sees. And it says that he ultimately became wealthy as a result with all kinds of speckled sheep and goats, but also all kinds of servants and camels and donkeys. In other words, he continued to grow an estate all during this time. So if we stopped right there, then we might think, man, Jacob is a genius. Look at what he did. Maybe even a little shrewd, right? But what we actually learn next is that the Lord was behind it the whole time. Look at chapter 31, verses 1 through 5. We're going to see how God caused Jacob's wealth and possessions to increase and actually Laban's to decrease. Chapter 31, verses 1 through 5. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what belonged to our father he has made all of his wealth. That's a little key there too. What belonged to our father. Now that's all the normal colored sheep and goats. He's made his wealth from that. Even they recognized. So Laban's son accused Jacob of wrongdoing, but the passage does not indicate that he had done anything wrong. You notice that? The passage never says anything to indicate that what Jacob is doing is wrong. They claim he had taken away his father's wealth. The text doesn't suggest that. We're going to find out why in a minute. Later in verse 19, we read that God was the one that behind it. Well, jump down into verse 19 of chapter 31. We'll jump ahead here. Is that 31? Hold on a second. It might not be the right one. Oh, verse 9. I'm sorry, not 19. Chapter 31, verse 9. God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me. It was God that was responsible for what was happening. And we'll see how that plays out here in a minute. What I find interesting about this is, we'll see here in a minute, that Laban tried to cheat Jacob from the beginning, and actually throughout the process continued to cheat Jacob, but the Lord prevented that from happening. Look at verses 6 through 9. Oh, so we're going to continue on, I'm sorry, in verses 1 through 5 here. Let's continue reading. Jacob saw the attitude of Laban, and behold, it was not friendly toward him as formerly. Well, duh. Not only had he seen Jacob's flock grow, seen his own flock not grow. Why? Because his flock was not producing white or black animals. So his flock wasn't growing. His flock's just getting older. What happens when sheep and ewes and everybody else gets old? They start to die off. And it's not being replenished by young ones. Well, he's not happy about it. And I would add there's probably a sense of double hatred there because he tried to deceive him in the first place and just figured out his plot didn't work. Right? So Laban's attitude was not favorable or friendly toward Jacob. Then the Lord said to Jacob, verse 3, return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. So the Lord at this point, he's done with it. He calls Jacob out. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to his flock in the field. And he said to them, I see your father's attitude, that it is not friendly towards me as it was formerly. But the God of my father has been with me. Go on. Verse 6, you know that I have served your father with all of my strength. That's basically a way of saying I've done it honorably. I've put my heart and soul into this. I have served him honorably. I've put all my strength into it. Yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. However, God did not allow him to hurt me. So throughout this period now, Laban has continually changed their agreement for how Jacob was supposed to be paid. We'll see how that works out in a minute. Notice he says that he did it 10 times there as well. I mean, this is a repeated offense by Laban. He constantly tried to rip off or tried to cheat Jacob in how he was serving him. Look at verses 7 and following. You know that I've served your father with all my strength. Your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. However, God did not allow him to hurt me. If he spoke thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then the flock brought forth speckled. And if he spoke thus, the striped shall be your wages, then all the flock brought forth striped. Thus God has taken away your father's livestock and given it to me. And it came about at that time when the flock were mating that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the male goats which were mating were striped, speckled, and spotted. Then the angel of God said to me in a dream, Jacob, and I said, here I am. He said, lift up your eyes now and see that all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and spotted. For I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise, leave this land, and return to the land of your birth. Even Rachel and Leah recognized that this was the work of God, not some type of misdeed by Jacob. Verse 14, Rachel and Leah said, do we still have any portion or inheritance in our father's house? In other words, there's nothing left. Are we not reckoned by him as foreigners? For he has sold us, and he has also entirely consumed our purchase price. Surely all the wealth which God has taken away from our father belongs to us and to our children. Now then, do whatever God has said to you. So what's going on here? Essentially, what Jacob is saying here is that Laban would come to him because Laban wasn't happy. He's like, huh, I see Jacob's flock growing, and he's, huh, my sheep and goats are producing speckled. So he changed the agreement. Instead of giving Jacob all the speckled, spotted, and striped, he says, no, you only get the speckled now. I get the striped and the spotted. So what would happen? All of a sudden, all of his lambs and everything are just producing spotted. And if he says, all right, now you only get the speckled ones. Now they just start producing speckled ones. Darn it! You only get the striped ones, and now they produce striped. And every 10 times, Jacob says this happened. Now, again, I think Jacob was probably very wise. I think he understood sheep and goats. And maybe there's something to his method of the way that he did the rods and all that kind of stuff. But I really highly doubt he can do something to make them just produce speckled, or just produce striped, or just produce spotted. And it tells us here that God pointed it out in a dream to him. Jacob, look up and see what's happening. Who's responsible for that? Who controls the genetics? This was all God. Now some have speculated, maybe God revealed to him using the rods and all that kind of stuff too. I don't know. But the reality of it here, what we see is that Every time Laban tried to rip off or cheat Jacob by changing the rules, God intervened. And he stepped in. Fine, Laban, you only want to give him the speckled, but guess what? That's all your flocks are going to produce, the speckled, and they're all his. So God was behind it the whole time. And Jacob tells us, the Lord prevented him from doing this. He kept changing my wages, but the Lord saw it. The Lord intervened. Now, you may remember back in high school, I don't know if, Sabrina, do you guys get, have you got into the whole genetic stuff where they make you draw the chart and you have the dominant genes and the recessive genes and, you know, you have the two dominant in the corner and then you have what, the dominant, the recessive, recessive, dominant, and you're supposed to be able to calculate, like, what are the chances of two blonde people getting married, having a child with dark hair and all that? Most of us adults have long forgotten all that stuff, right? But they say, when you start to get into this, that if Laban only had black and white in the sheep and the goats, in other words, you would have basically, say, white sheep, because they're supposed to be white. And if you get two white sheep to come together, they probably still have those recessive genes that would make the other colors. But when you start to do the math, you might get, at best, 25% of the offspring to be speckled or striped or black or whatever. And yet, what's happening with Laban's flock? It says they only brought forth. The only one that can do that is the one who controls genetics. This is a supernatural thing. So as smart as Jacob might have been, as much as he might have understood chemistry and medicine and fertility and all of that, there was no way Jacob could have caused these things to produce the way they did. And again, we have the text that comes right out and tells us that it was the Lord that was doing it, which means that all of this was supernatural. So even though we have Jacob, who for the first 14 years of his existence there, worked for Laban and wasn't able to do anything for himself. Granted, he got a wife, two wives and a bunch of children, but he wasn't able to build his own estate. Laban knew that. But he still, any good owner or manager would have stepped in and said, you deserve 20% of my flock, because that was the going rate. But he didn't do any of that. And then, because he had been blessed, wanted Jacob to continue working for him, he should have paid him 20%. But he didn't. He's willing to accept the deal of, well, take the bad ones. Take the ones that aren't quite as pretty. Maybe it's 5%. But then rips them off and doesn't even give them those. And then through the course of this time, as he's watching what's going on, he continues to try to shaft Jacob by changing the rules of the game. And yet every step of the way, God steps in. So in spite of the fact that Laban is trying to harm him, the Lord sees it all. The Lord now steps in and takes care of Jacob. So what's our takeaway with all of this? Well, I've already alluded to this, but I think the first one is that when we serve others like Jacob did, even if it costs us something, even if we get mistreated, even if we don't get what's rightfully ours, even if our manager tries to cheat us, ultimately God sees it. Doesn't mean we shouldn't speak up. Jacob did. I mean, he spoke up and said, wait a minute, I'm not going to continue serving you this way. I've got to do something for myself here. I've got to start taking care of my family. He spoke up. We should too. Right? That's what's fair. But even when we get the short end of the stick to some degree, God sees it all and will ultimately take care of us. Will he not? He did with Jacob. Now, those blessings may not always be financial. They may be in other ways. But ultimately, God sees it all. He pays back according to deeds. So, we should be assured, just like Jacob, that God sees it. You know, it's interesting because when I was in college, we had a roommate that bailed out on us and stuck the rest of us with his rent. And that was hard as college students to try to cover his rent. But we didn't have much choice. So we continued to pay his rent. We continued to pester him and, hey, dude, you got this obligation. You know, this is hard on us, you know. But ultimately, in the end, we never were paid back for what we spent. He just bailed on us, voided us. But ultimately, in the end, God took care of us. Even though it was hard for us to make ends meet, God provided the finances to do it. Ultimately, in the end, God took care of it. It's the way He works. Second thing I would pull from this is that it's hard for us sometimes when we see that to want to continue serving or working diligently. Sometimes it'd be like, why? Why should I do that? It's hard for us to serve those that don't always appreciate what we do. It's really easy to serve those who constantly praise us and bless us and reward us for it, right? If you're getting a raise every year because of the work you do, it's really easy to stay there, isn't it? But when you don't get what you think you should get or you get mistreated, it's a lot more difficult for us. I'm struck here by the fact that why didn't Jacob, as soon as he discovered, wait a minute, where'd those speckled and spotted sheep go that I'm supposed to get? Why did he just pack up his bags and leave? He went ahead and he served Laban. It says he cared for his flocks. Do you think maybe Jacob was confident God would ultimately take care of him? Maybe. Or maybe he just understood genetics and thought, well, I'll get something out of it. I don't know. But it's pretty clear that the Lord spoke to him at some point and said, look up and see. We don't know when that vision came. It could have come at the very beginning. The Bible doesn't always record things in the exact order that they occur. There's often flashbacks and other things. We don't know when this happened, but maybe it occurred when Jacob looked out and saw there were no speckled and spotted ones. He's like, I gotta start with this. Might it have been that God spoke to him at that point and said, look up, see what's going on. I'll show you what's going to happen here. Clearly it happened earlier because God had warned him about the wages and what would happen there. So, what do we do with that? I'm reminded of something that James warned the rich about in James chapter 4. Let me read that for you a second here. James chapter 4. Oops. James chapter 4, verses 13 through 15. He's talking to the rich here, and there's some tension going on, but he's got some instruction for the rich. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will do such and such, we'll go to such and such a city, and we'll spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You're just a vapor that appears for a long time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. So the instruction he gives to those, in this case the rich, who are seeking to make a living, seeking to make a profit, he says, really, instead of planning and orchestrating everything else out, maybe you ought to be saying, you know, if the Lord wills, this will work out. If the Lord wills, we'll make money. If the Lord wills, that I would suggest is probably the attitude that probably would describe Jacob here as he looks at Laban's flocks and sees what Laban is doing. He trusts that the Lord will ultimately take care of him, provide for him. It helps that the Lord spoke to him. And that ought to be our attitude as well. That we ought to be able to say, you know, if it's the Lord's will, I will serve and the Lord will take care of everything else. Proverbs says, whatever you do, do your work. I'm sorry, this is from Colossians. Proverbs 16:9 says, the man who plans his ways, but the Lord directs his steps. But Colossians chapter 3 gives us a principle for working. It says, whatever you do, do your work heartily as for the Lord, rather than what? For men. Knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. It is the Lord Christ whom you serve. What that means is, as we serve others, even if it occasionally costs us something, even if we don't feel we're getting the recognition we deserve, even if we feel they're not always being fair with us, we're not serving them. We're ultimately serving the Lord. And it's from Him that we get the reward. And so while sometimes serving others has some nice benefits and perks for us, I get paid a salary for doing what I do at work. But you know what? I can guarantee you that if all I had in my head was I'm just working for the salary, be a little empty. I get a real kick out of doing what I do because it's not a typical IT job where I sit behind a desk and just type code or whatever. I love the fact that I can see the result of what I do. I work very closely sometimes with the sales staff and with agency where the products and the things that I sometimes have created or the work that I do, I see how that benefits those. One of the things I love about my job, and I share this with people at work all the time, when they call me and they say, oh, I'm so sorry for bothering you, and I kind of tease them. I'm like, look, I got a job because of you. But I always tell them, like, look, no, my whole goal here is I want your job to be easier. I want you to be more productive. And I'll be real frank, there are times where God has to kind of give me an attitude adjustment because it doesn't always get reciprocated. Because you don't call the IT guy just to say, hey, I love you, dude. You're calling the IT guy because you're upset and something's broken and it's your fault. And so those are hard sometimes. And sometimes I get abused as a result of that. But in my head, I keep thinking, you know, Lord, you put me here. You want to bless these people. And so I'm here to make their jobs easier, even if they don't understand it, even if they don't always feel it. That's a hard thing for us. Matt and I joke sometimes back and forth about just the abuse, you know? Shaking his head, right? But it's hard, isn't it, Matt? I mean, it is hard to serve when we know, man, I'm not getting recognized, I'm not getting paid properly, I'm not getting treated right. Oh, man! You know? I got a phone call the other night, 9 o'clock at night, from somebody out in Kansas, you know? And I'm like, come on, it's 9 o'clock at night, I got a life. But what did I do? Served them, but it cost me something. Took me away from whatever I was doing, you know. Simple explanation, but still nonetheless. And so one of the takeaways from this, I think, is that we're supposed to work diligently. We're supposed to give it our whole heart, soul, mind, and strength when it comes to serving other people, even if they're unsaved. And part of that is because we want God to bless them because maybe His blessings will lead them to repentance. Maybe it'll open up an avenue for the gospel. The unsaved world doesn't treat them like that. But we can. But sometimes it'll cost us something. Maybe that's when we should double down. Now, I'm not saying we should just be doormats, let people walk all over us. That's not at all what I'm saying. But I'm saying our attitude ought to be one of, much like Jacob, I'm going to just trust the Lord here. The Lord will take care of me, and He certainly did. Because when he left Padan Aram, Laban was back to where he started with nothing. He blew it. Because Jacob had made him wealthy, but he blew it. And God took and blessed Jacob in spite of all the attempts that Laban tried to rip him off, tried to harm him. The Lord took care of him, saw it all. And He will for us too. So, we should serve diligently, knowing that God will bless others because of us. But sometimes it'll cost us. We shouldn't be afraid of that. And when that does happen, we ought to recognize, but God sees it all. He'll take care of us. He'll provide for us. Amen?